This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
And you should say to them, Kadoshim Tiyu, you shall be holy, Kikodosh Ani Hashem Elokechem, because I, the Lord your God, am holy. So there's a chiyuv in the Torah here, one of the Tariyag mitzvahs, one of the 613 mitzvahs of Kadoshim Tiyu. One has to be holy, one has to practice Kedusha, whatever that means. And it's in fact the meaning of this mitzvah which causes the Mefoshim a lot of difficulty. What does it mean you have to be holy? How do you be holy? What is the Maaseh HaMitzvah? What is the action that whereby you fulfill the requirements of this mitzvah? What does it mean? Kadoshim Tiyu. So the Sefer says, Prushim Tiyu. You must be separate. That's what Kedusha is. And we have to be very careful in understanding that Sifra. Because Lechora, on the surface, it appears that what the Sifra is saying is it's expressing a concept of Kedusha which we've always understood is not the Jewish concept of Kedusha, to be separate from everything. And on the contrary, we've always talked about that as being one of the essential differences between Christianity and many other religions on the one hand and Yiddishkeit on the other hand. That while yes, there's a certain separateness which is required, on the other hand there's a certain involvement which is required, and that Yiddishkeit is a combination of these both. And the Sifra says Kedoshim Tiyu, Prushim Tiyu. Kedoshim means Prushim. Now in the shiur tonight we're going to explain what Kedoshim Tiyu means, and there aren't any big chidushim. The biggest advantage that you'll get out of the shiur is if after the shiur, tomorrow or tonight, you go over some of the sources that I'm bringing, particularly the Rashi and the Ramban, as well as the 13th perek of the Mesilas Yesharim. It will open it for you, it will enable you to learn them and understand them. Says Rashi, Kedoshim Tiyu, heavy prushim, you shall be separate. But Rashi goes further and he explains what you must be separate from. Says Rashi, doesn't mean you must be separate from all the good things in life. Doesn't mean, like as we thought a moment ago, that you must separate yourself from day to day living, that you must have nothing to do with day to day living. No, heavy prushim min ha'arayos min ha'aveiro, you should be separate from sexual immorality and from aveiros. That's what prushim means. Because you'll find in the Torah that whenever it talks about a separation from arayas, from any form of sexual morality, immorality, there you find the Torah also refers to matters of kedusha. So that somehow kedusha seems to flourish in places where there are gedorim, where there are measures taken against coming close to any form of sexual misbehavior. That's what Rashi says. And the Rashi is very difficult. And the Sifra was difficult enough. The Sifra implied that you've got to be separate from everything which isn't holy, which is difficult. Rashi says, no, it doesn't mean you must be separate from the world. Kadoshim Tiyu, you must be Purushim, you must be separate. Yes, you must be separate, but says Rashi, separate from what? Separate from Aveiros. That's what you must be separate from. And that's very, very difficult, because obviously you must be separate from Aveiros. What is the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu adding that we didn't previously have? What are we being told? Kedoshim Tiyu, that you mustn't do Aveiros? Can't be. And yet that's what Rashi seems to imply. Hevu Perushim Minhu Arayus, or Minhu Aveira. Separate yourself from Arayus and from Aveira. Very difficult. And the Ramban tackles Rashi on this. And the Ramban says that as he sees it in the Teras Kohanim, which is the Sifra, Ra'isi, I saw, says the Ramban, Stam Prushim Tiyu. It just says they're Prushim Tiyu. It doesn't say Min Arayas or Min Aveira. So that's Rashi's interpretation of the Sifra, says the Ramban. And that, says the Ramban, is a difficult interpretation for obvious reasons. And therefore the Ramban goes on to develop his own idea. ולפי דעתי, according to my view, אין הפרישוס הזו לפרש מן הראיות כדבר הרב. This precious, this keeping oneself separate, is not to keep oneself separate from sexual immorality and from averus, as the Rav says, as Rashi says. אבל הפרישוס הוא המוזכרת בכל מקום בתלמוד. But the precious is that precious which is talked about all over the Gemara, שבעליה נקראים פרושים, that the masters of this form of precious are called פרושים, והעניין, and the matter is, and then he goes on to develop his idea. And the Ramban says that it would be feasible, were it not for this one mitzvah, to keep all the dinim of the Torah, to keep kashrus and to keep Shabbos and to keep taras hamishpacha and to keep all the dinim of the Torah, and still to be a despicable person. It would be feasible to be a frum person. One could be a person who's careful and meticulous about all the four sections of the Shulchan Aruch, every one of them. And he doesn't do a single avera, but you can't sit at the table, same table as he sits, because if you do, you tend to get a little bit sick and put off your own eating. So the Ramban, it's feasible you could have such a man, that he's frum and he's a Talmid Chacham and he's everything, but a mensch he isn't. It's feasible. He says it's feasible you could have a man who keeps the whole Torah, but he's a drunkard. He drinks. And you know, the Ramban says he drinks. He's talking about, after all, the Talmid Chacham, and he's talking about a frum person. So he's not talking about a person who goes to the bar and drinks down there in Hillbrow somewhere. He's talking about a person that every simcha has to have a lot of drink, and at every occasion has to have not one or two l'chaim, but to the point where he actually gets despicably drunk. So the Ramban, there would be no issur in the Torah. Doesn't say anywhere thou shalt not get drunk. Certainly, if it's not at a seudas mitzvah, particularly if one's at a wedding or something. So where does it say you shouldn't get drunk? It says the Ramban, Kedoshim Tziyu. That's not Kedusha. To get drunk, that's not Kedusha. To eat with a noise and with your mouth wide open and making a mess all over the place, that's not Kedusha. That's not the way a person operates. That's not Kedoshim Tziyu, Ki Kodosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. We can't imagine, so to say, if God were with us, that isn't the way God would eat. That's all that one has to have clear in one's mind. Imagine that the Ribbono Shel Olam decided to personify himself and to come down to the world as a human being. Just imagine such a thing for a moment. He's not going to eat the way this gentleman that we've just described. He's not going to sit at a wedding and drink so many l'chaims that he gets drunk and makes an idiot of himself. That the Ribbono Shel Olam wouldn't do. That's not Kedusha. And if not Kedusha, we're not allowed to do that either. It's an Isser of the Torah. It's an Isser of the Oraisa, classified under Kedoshim Tziyu. Not allowed to do it. Purim, we're allowed to do it. Sukkot Torah, we're allowed to do it. There are times when we're allowed to do it, but as a general thing, we're not allowed to do it. Says the Ramban, that's the meaning of Kedoshim Tziyu. Kedoshim Tziyu, in fact, is one of the most important mitzvahs of the Torah, in that it gives the whole meaning of the Torah. It gives the whole spirit of the Torah. It's possible to keep the whole body of the Torah without keeping the spirit of the Torah if you take out the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tziyu. Kedoshim Tziyu is the heart of the Torah. Take away the heart, and the rest of the Torah ceases to function. That's what the Ramban says, and Ramban brings two examples where the Torah uses the same kind of concept. The one example the Ramban brings is from the laws of Shabbos, where the Ramban says that it's possible to keep all the laws of Shabbos. You don't do any of the 39 Av Melachos, and you don't do any of the hundreds of Toldos Melachos, and you don't do any of the thousands of Isurim Derabbanan, and you're meticulous, and you say Kiddush, and you light your candles, and you have three meals a day, and everything's beautiful, but it's still no Shabbos. Doesn't have a Shabbos atmosphere. There's no guarantee that by keeping the do's and don'ts of halacha that you're going to achieve the right atmosphere. That there isn't such a thing. One has to keep the do's and don'ts of halacha meticulously, but there's no guarantee that just by doing what you have to do and not doing what you don't have to do, there's no guarantee that you're going to get it right. On the contrary, says the Ramban, you need another mitzvah after all those details. The Shabbos is one of the most complex and meticulously detailed system of halacha. What you may do and what you may not do, and how you can do it and how you can't do it. And we've got a whole mesechta about it, two mesechtas about it, more than two mesechtas about it, and a whole section in Shulchan Aruch about Shabbos. It's complicated. One can keep it all and do it all, and still, in spite of that, we have to have one further mitzvah, which says the Ramban is the most important mitzvah of all. Tishpois, you've got to make Shabbos. It's not automatic that by keeping the dinim of Shabbos you're going to have a Shabbos. On the contrary, you can have a very frustrated day. You're not allowed to do this, and you're not allowed to do that, and you're not allowed to do that. So what do you do? I think I told you once that a certain kid came home after the last day of term in Yeshiva Tana. The father said to him, what were you told to do? What were you told? He said, the Mashgiach gave us the Shmuz, he gave us a shir before we went home. The father says, what did he tell you? Well, he said, we shouldn't go to movies during the holiday. The father says, what else did he tell you? He said, we shouldn't read newspapers and things like that during the holiday. Did he tell you anything else? He said, yeah, we shouldn't read books and things like that during the holiday. He said, anything else? He said, we shouldn't learn too much either, because it's holidays, we should relax. He said, what else did he tell you? He said, we shouldn't go out too much and mix with people, we should stay at home a little bit. Father said, eventually, he said, what did he tell you you should do? You've got a month and he's told you what you mustn't do. What's there left to do? The kid didn't know. And that's what one has to be careful of with Shabbos too. Because Shabbos can become a miserable, miserable day for oneself, one's children, one's children's children, and one's cattle, and she servants, and maid servants, and men servants, and all that is theirs. It can become a horrible, terrible day. A day when you're not allowed to do this, and you're not allowed to do that, and you can't read, and you can't write, and you can't go out, and you can't, nothing at all. And particularly for the women who are tied at home with the children, because there's no Erev, and they can't get around, and all sorts of things, like you can have it can be murder. And you're not being Mekai in the mitzvah of Shabbos. You're not doing anything wrong, but you're not having a Shabbos. You're not going to be punished for being over any Yisurim. But you don't have a Shabbos. You haven't been Mekai in the mitzvah, which is the most sensitive and possibly the most difficult of all the mitzvahs of Shabbos. The mitzvah of Tishbos, you've got to make a Shabbos. And that's not easy. That's difficult. And that's why it's a very great mitzvah, by the way, to have people in your home on Shabbos. Those of you who do know how to be Mekai in the mitzvah of Tish B'Av, it's a very big mitzvah, because Tish B'Av is not a mitzvah that you can learn from any book, and it's not a mitzvah you can be taught at any shir. There's only one way you can learn how to be Mekai in the mitzvah of Tish B'Av, and that's by spending many Shabbos in the homes of people who know how to do it. That's why it's a very big mitzvah and terribly important for one to look around and make sure that there's nobody in shul, or nobody who might want to be in shul, who doesn't know how to be Mekai in the mitzvah of Tish B'Av and isn't at a home where he can see how the mitzvah of Tish B'Av is being kept. That's the only way it can be taught, is by having people in your home and showing them what the mitzvah is. Not only that, but having people in your home helps you Mekai in the mitzvah of Tish B'Av as well. There's more activity, there are things going on, there's more discussion. If they're intelligent people, the discussion is on a good level. All that helps you be Mekai in the mitzvah of Tish B'Av as well. So you should remember Shabbos is a time, as far as possible, to have people, particularly people who don't know how to do it themselves. And the Ramban gives another example. The mitzvahs of the Choshen Mishpat, we have a whole system of business and financial law. A most complex system, possibly one of the most complex of classical legal systems that existed in terms of business law. Every detail is worked out. Says the Ramban, you would think that's enough. If you keep all the dinim of Chosh and Mishpat, you can't go wrong in business. It must be the right way to operate, says the Ramban. No. At the end of all those mitzvahs of what you may do and what you may not do, and how you can do and how you can't do, and borrowing money and lending money, and dealing and selling, and buying and weighing, and the whole story, at the end of it still it has to say, V'asisa atov v'hayoshev b'nei Hashem alekech. You've got to do that which is good and righteous and straight in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's possible to keep all the dinim of Chosh and Mishpat and still be a crook. That's what the Ramban says. You'll always hear people arguing, but it's okay because this and because that, and you're only cheating the receiver of revenue, and he's only a goy, and it's only a government in any case, and whose money is the government's after all? It's mine as well, and it doesn't really matter, and this thing and that thing, and they bring you proofs from here and proofs from there that the biggest lot of shmuchel rai is okay. It's not okay. Because even assuming you could justify it in terms of all the other laws, there is still a din of asisa hatova hayosha. I always said that doesn't mean you have to be a shlemiel. Somebody said to me, he said, you know, he said, I know somebody who is so straight that if he's driving down a straight road and the road bends, he'll carry on going straight. That's a shlemiel. You don't have to be a shlemiel. When the road bends, you can bend with it, if it's not against halacha. But if the road doesn't bend, You can't bend even if you think that it's within halacha. Says Rashi, the Ramban says the fact that the Torah needs to tell you that, after all the details it still has to tell you, shows you how crooked you can go, even though you're keeping all the meticulous do's and don'ts of the halacha. Unbelievable, it's incredible. And that's why I always say to you, by the way, that what we're trying to do in this Beis HaMedrash and what should be tried to be done in all places of Jewish learning is not just teach the body of Jewish law and Jewish practice, because you can know it all and still be a novel b'rashus HaTorah, says the Rambam. You can know it all and keep it all and still be a kind of human being that the Ramban or you and I wouldn't like to share a room with. It's not our kind of people. It's possible. Yiddishkeit is a whole culture, as we've often talked about, and what we've got to try and teach by through the medium of Torah and Halacha and Chumash and Rashi and Midrashim and Tanakh, Chazal, what we've got to try and teach is that whole culture. What it means, Kadosh and Tiyu, how a person is meant to behave. And I would say really that the subject of all the Moshe Shabbos Shirim, from the time they started until the time they will finish, is really this one mitzvah. It's really the mitzvah of Kadosh and Tiyu. Because all the other mitzvahs you get from Halacha Shirim, and you get from Gemara Shirim, and you get all over the place. The one mitzvah really that we're talking about in this year is Kadosh and Tiyu. The different aspects, because Kadosh and Tiyu now permeates every other word of the Torah. In every mitzvah there is an aspect of Kadosh and Tiyu. You can do the mitzvah and you can do it with Kadosh and Tiyu. That, says the Ramban, is what the whole thing means. It means Purushim. You've got to keep yourself separate even from things which you're allowed to do. You're allowed to drink wine, says the Ramban, but hey, not too much. Purushim, keep a little bit of a distance from it. You're allowed to eat, but you don't have to have six helpings. Take it easy, be a mensch. Kadosh and Tiyu. You're allowed to do business, but don't get so enwrapped in it that there's nothing else in your life. Kadosh and Tiyu. That's what Purushim means, says the Ramban. Not that you separate yourself from the world in the sense that you don't have anything to do with it. Not like Rashi says that you separate yourself from Averas, because that obviously you have to separate yourself from. But that you separate yourself in degree, even from those things you're allowed to do. In other words, what the Ramban is saying is, in those things which are mutter, in those things which are allowed, just try and keep an even keel. Just do it in the right proportion. Don't lose your sense of proportion. And Kadosh and Tiyu is the ability not to lose one's sense of proportion. That's the Ramban. But we still have to understand Rashi too. I'm going to give you two explanations for Rashi. The first explanation we get from a Rashi at the end of the Sedra, where the Sedra really repeats the same mitzvah again and says, "V'yitim li kadoshim ki kadosh ani Hashem." You must be holy to me because I am holy. I, your God, am holy. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah omers, the Rashi brings in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, "Minayin shelo yomer adam nafshi kotza bevasar chazi ef shelil bush kilayim." From where do we know from that it's wrong for a man to say, "Pork, I couldn't eat pork. Makes me sick to think of it." That's not the right thing to say. Shatnez, I could never wear shatnez. No. Aval yomer, a person must say, "Efshi, sure, I would love pork. Must be delicious. My Yisrael, but what can I do? Vavishu b'shamayim, gozor alai." God said no. That's it. Talmud Leimah, we see from here, v'avdil eschem min ho'amim, liyoyot li. I shall separate you from the people to be to me, shetehei havdalotchem mehem lishmi. So that your separation from them should be for me. Peiresh min ho'aveiro mekabel olav ol malchus shamayim. Separating oneself from aveiro and accepting upon oneself the responsibility of the kingdom of heaven. What Rashi is saying here is the most important thing, and an area where we go so terribly wrong. We've often noted how Yiddishkeit is overbalanced on the side of the negative mitzvahs. Right? There are more negative mitzvahs than there are positive mitzvahs. Is that right? There are more negative mitzvahs than there are positive mitzvahs. Firstly, there are simply more. There are more negative mitzvahs than there are positive mitzvahs. And secondly, in everything one does, somehow the positive mitzvahs that there are, the mitzvahs, I say, many of them don't apply. Many of them are for a king and for a kohen and for a woman and for a levi, and in the time of the Beis HaMikdash and in Eretz Yisrael. By the time you finish on a day-to-day basis, what we spend most of our time on is what we're not supposed to be doing. If you just think as a Jew, when you think through the day, how have you expressed your Yiddishkeit today? Okay, you've davened, you've done a couple of things, a couple of acts of mitzvahs you've done. But most of it is, oh, I can't do this, can't do this, can't do that. Comes the possibility that we become very negative, nebulous personalities. That everything we do, we can't do, and we become scared and fragile and introverted, and we're just scared to touch anything, everything's wrong. And particularly when this is compounded with Musar, like, oh, you be careful that you don't. And not only is the Torah itself overbalanced on this, or balanced on the side of mitzvahs lo ta'aseh, but then you pile onto that a bit of Musar, and oh, you must be careful what happens if you do go wrong, and where you're going to land up, and Gehenna isn't a nice place. By the time you finish, the poor guy is such a frazzle of a human being. He doesn't know what to do with himself, and he becomes neurotic, and he becomes nervous, and he loses the capacity to do mitzvahs asay as well completely. This is one of the big problems with the way Yiddishkeit is being taught today. It's being taught very much as a negative thing. All the things you mustn't do. Oh, you have to show them what you shouldn't do. Says Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, that's not the point. The point is exactly in the same way as a mitzvah asay, you do lishmo. It's not good enough just to go through the routine of doing the mitzvah, but it has a positive spiritual content of elevating the mitzvah towards some higher purpose. That's doing the mitzvah lishmo. When you take a glass of wine and you make kiddush, it's not just a little thing that you're saying. You're taking the wine and the Shabbos and the table and everything, and you're elevating the whole thing l'shem shemayim. You're dedicating it towards the Ribbono Shel Olam. So says the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, which Rashi brings here, every mitzvah lo ta'aseh, every negative mitzvah must be lishmo. It must be done also l'shem shamayim. You're doing it not because you're scared of the negative mitzvah, but you're doing it because you love the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why don't you eat pork? Because I love God, not because I don't like pork, or not because I'm not allowed to. Because I've made mekabel olai ol malchus shamayim. It's because I've accepted upon myself the ol malchus shamayim. That's why I don't eat pork. I would love to, I'm sure it tastes wonderful, but I can't. Then one has to understand why not, and it goes into a bit of the meaning of what a chazal represents and why we don't eat it, etc., etc. Be that as it may, the basic motivation is can't do it. What we have to see here is that the method of handling averas is not to stifle natural human function. It's a natural human function to enjoy eating good things. And the goyim say that pork is good, so we can believe them. They all say it's good. So there's no reason to suspect that they're telling lies. So we still know it's good, it's probably good, probably tastes very nice. You don't have to be scared to admit that it tastes nice. You don't have to develop a guilt feeling. And those people who in their youth used to eat it, and Baruch Hashem, they've come back, and they chose a b'tshuva, and now they're not eating it at all, they don't have to feel guilty about the fact that they once ate it and enjoyed it, having done the tshuva afterwards. It's normal, it's natural human function to enjoy such a thing. All averas are natural human functions, but we aren't permitted to behave in a natural human way. We've got to behave in a superhuman way. But that is a natural human function, we're free to admit. And not only are we free to admit, but we must admit, because if we don't, it becomes negative. If you start developing an aversion to the avera themselves, not to an aversion to the idea of doing an avera. Obviously one has to have an aversion to the idea of doing an avera. But if you start developing an aversion to the thing itself, and that becomes your reason for not doing it, or an immunity towards it. It's not for you, you don't feel it at all. It's not it. Then you miss the opportunity of doing the, of not doing the Avera, Lishmo, for the sake of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and of turning the whole thing into a positive experience. That's why we always say, Ktzat min ha'or, doche harbe min ha'choshech. How do you chase the dark out? And the way we handle Averas, in modern day-to-day life, the way we're taught to handle averas is as peculiar as it would be if you saw a man chasing around the dark room with a broomstick, and you say, what are you trying to do? He says, get rid of the dark. That's what it's like. So don't be an idiot, turn on the light, you'll get rid of the dark. That's how it is with Averas as well. Don't chase around trying to push the Averas out. You won't get them out. It's not that easy. Put in a bit of O Malchus Shemayim. You just have to inject a little bit of the Avat Hashem, of an understanding of Torah, of the Ribbono Shel Olam, of what it's all for. You put a little bit of that in, and the Averas start disappearing very quickly. That's what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says. And now we can understand on one level what Rashi means in the beginning of the parasha. When Rashi says, Prushim min ha'arayas u min ha'averah, what he's saying is not that you mustn't do averas. Obviously you mustn't do averas. We know from the whole Torah that you mustn't do averas. What Rashi says is you've got to be actively separating yourself from them at all times. Not that you put them out of your mind and you couldn't possibly see yourself doing an averah. That's doing, not doing averas, but that's not Prushim. Prushim is where you're actively saying, I cannot do the Avera because it's against the Ratzon Hashem, and I've accepted O Malchus Shemayim, and therefore I can't do the Avera. And every time the Avera presents itself, that's the process one goes through of actively being mafrish oneself from the Avera. Then, says Rashi, one's being Mekayim the Mitzvah of Kedoshim to you. It shouldn't be something that one develops. But there's an automatic, one just doesn't do it automatically. No, that's not a tzaddik. Tzaddik is somebody who automatically would do it, but he's able not to function automatically. And you remember a long time ago we did the Chazon Ish, where the Chazon Ish basically said that, and the Rambam says it mefurish, that a person who's born with natural instincts to do good, you get a person who's born a natural onav, he's not born with gaiva. It's one of his strong points, he's modest. And he's born a natural tzaddik. You find people who are just born with naturally good middos, and they're born into a family of Yorei Shemayim, and they really just, there's no way they can go except to be good and righteous. Says the Rambam, they don't get any tzar for that really. That's not called working on themselves. That's not called changing themselves. They've got to find the areas in which they're weak and work on that. Just doing things because that's the natural tendency one has developed or one's born with, that is not tzitzis. Tzidkus is acknowledging the existence of a certain level of operation, a certain basic human or animal, whatever you want to call it, level of operation, and developing the ability to operate on a still higher level, but not pretending that the bottom level doesn't exist. I remember in Yeshiva once when the food was particularly bad and we were complaining to the Rosh Yeshiva, and he called in the senior boys of the yeshiva, and he said, is it true that the food is so bad? They said, no, they don't know, haven't really noticed, you know, they don't come to yeshiva to eat food, they come to yeshiva to learn, and no, they have to eat, so they eat, but whatever they eat, it really doesn't make any difference, so they're the wrong people to ask. And the Rosh Yeshiva got very upset. He said, I like teaching human beings to her, they're not angels. If you're going to be an angel, there must be other yeshivas for you. Here we deal with human beings. And these, that one doesn't have to feel embarrassed about acknowledging the existence of normal human functions. Not only does one not have to feel embarrassed about acknowledging the existence of such functions, but one has to go and see a doctor if those functions aren't functioning. If one finds that one has no Yetzer Hara, and one finds that one's not attracted to do all the naughty things that one's not supposed to do, one has no time or whatever to do them, then poshut, one has to go and see a doctor. And depending on what areas, either one goes to see a GP, or one sees a specialist, or sometimes even a psychiatrist or a psychologist. It just depends on what area. But that's not a normal human being. Normal human being is, Efshi, I could do the Avera. Oh, and how I could do the Avera. I could even enjoy doing the Avera. But I won't. That's what a mitzvah is. The mitzvah loitase. Performing the mitzvah of not doing something. And we mustn't forget that it's a mitzvah loitase. It's not just a loitase. It's not just a don't do. It's a mitzvah loitase. It's the mitzvah of not doing. And why does it have to be makayim, actively keep the mitzvah loitase? Not passively keep them just by not doing them. But there's another aspect also to prushim to you, which seems to be what Rashi is getting at, and that's the middle of Prishus. There's a middle of Prishus which the Mesillas Yeshorim deals with, and various other Sforim do as well. And I want to just explain this middle of Prishus to you, that I must warn you that I'm explaining it to you not because I believe that there's anybody here who's on the level that they have to worry terribly much about it. Prishus
one has to be quite far on the lower levels of the Torah observance and of Yiddishkeit and of Musar and of Midos before one starts with Precious. Again, one of the big problems is that in modern Yiddishkeit, Precious is about the first thing people learn. And then they start learning all the important things, by which time it's too late. Precious practiced too early, the Maseilas Yesharim himself says, at the end of Precious practiced too early can be dangerous. I'll just try and see if I can find offhand. What you must be very careful about in developing Precious, this he says at the end, I'm telling it to you at the beginning because you should know it even before we start. That a human being should not want to skip and jump to the other end of Precious in one moment. Because he won't make it. He should start developing the middle of Precious very slowly, little by little. Today you should be kone, you should acquire. Doesn't mean you should imitate a poresh. Doesn't mean you should act like a monkey and do Precious. Yikne must become yours. You must acquire a little bit of the middle of Precious. And when you've acquired a little bit, macha yosif alof ma'at yosef, tomorrow you can add just a little bit more. Ad shiyis ragil boi legamri, until you become accustomed to it. Ki yoshuv loy kemoteva mamash, and then it will become part of your nature. Then you're ready to become a person who acts with Precious. So I'm telling you this, we're learning this concept of Precious and the middah of Precious, not because I think it's something that you've got to start practicing, but because it's a middah, it's a concept in Torah which one has to understand. It will help you understand certain aspects of many gedolim. It will help you understand many chazal. And although it's not something which we have to start practicing, it is something which maybe one can start just a little grain. One can at least start working on it very, very slowly, as the Maseilas Yesharim says. Take it little by little and start in little areas and see it develop over a period of years. But Precious is something which develops over years, not months. What's Precious? Precious, says the Maseilas Yesharim, is to Chassidus what Zehirus is to Zvizus. Okay, now, and remember, I've told you now what Precious is, and you're not to start practicing it immediately, so it has to take a while. Chassidus is doing Lifnei Mishurat Hadin. That's really what Chassidus is, going beyond what the Torah requires. But, says the Maseilas Yesharim, you have to be terribly careful. Because going beyond what the Torah requires means not that you're really going beyond, but that you are perceiving the essence of the Ratzon Hashem, and you're projecting it beyond the mere ritual and statute mitzvahs of the Torah. For example, by studying the dinim, even take the Ramban sort of style, by studying the dinim of Choshen Mishpat, let's say it didn't say in the Torah of Asit Atova HaYosha, let's say it only gave all the other dinim. By studying the laws of business of Choshen Mishpat, you could, if you studied deep enough, work out that essentially what God wants from you is to be straight. And then you would know that even when something appears legal, if it's not straight, you can't do it. Although it doesn't say anywhere you can't. That's really what Chassidus means. Chassidus means penetrating to the very depths of understanding of what it really is that God wants from you in this particular mitzvah, and then taking that in spirit of the law beyond what it, where it's taken in the letter of the law. That's what it is, like Tish versus Shabbos, and like Vatisa Atev HaYosho with Choshen Mishpat. So with everything, says the Maseilas Yesharim, everything has a letter of the law, and there's a spirit of the law which goes further, but you've got to be very careful that you understand the spirit of the law correctly. Because if you misunderstand and you project, you'll find yourself creating a new religion that doesn't say anything about it anyway. So you've got to be careful, and that's why, says the Maseilas Yesharim, it says, Loi am ha'oretz chosid. An Amoritz can never be a chosid. It's not possible to be a chosid and to be an Amoritz. To be a chosid without knowing the whole of Shas is laughable. It's just ridiculous to even think of getting to the level of chasidus without being at home in Shas. It's not possible. Without being able to learn up a sugya properly, without being able to take a concept and go back to the sources and see where it comes from, and go to all the shittas of the Tanoim and the Amoraim and the Rishonim and the Achronim, and come to Shulchan Aruch and to the Achronei Achronim, and to be able to put the whole thing in its correct perspective and balance. If you can't do that, there's no way you can really understand the Yesod, the principle of the mitzvah. And if you don't understand the principle of the mitzvah, there's no way you can project it. So a person who's not a Talmid Chacham, a person who can't learn up a sugya from beginning to end, so he has no hope of being a chassid. Lo yamoritz chassid. That's chassidus. Frishus is to chassidus what zehirus is to zrizus. Zrizus is a certain style of doing mitzvahs. Zehirus is a certain style of not doing averus. Likewise, chassidus is a certain style of doing mitzvahs. Frishus is a certain style of not doing averus. Here it works the opposite way around. Chassidus works that you start with the principle, you penetrate to understand what the principle of the mitzvah is, not just what the letter of the law is, but really what the spirit of the law is. And when you've understood the spirit of the law, you project it beyond the letter of the law. That's chassidus. Precious is the understanding that to understand an avera, you've got to trace it back. Chassidus, you project forward. Precious, you've got to trace back. And you've got to understand that in the same way as through chassidus a mitzvah can go much further forward than it says in the Torah, so through precious an avera can go much further backwards than it says in the Torah. I'll explain what we mean. I was debating with somebody once about the laws that govern the interrelationship between unmarried men and women, and he was claiming that it's unnatural to expect a couple in their teens, late teens, early 20s who are going out who aren't yet married to keep their hands off each other. It's unnatural. And why does the Torah put people into unnatural situations? So I agreed with him that it was unnatural and pointed out that the Torah really recommends early marriage. So what's unnatural is already getting married late. That's where it becomes unnatural. But okay, so we're already in an unnatural situation. Now it's a question of trying to make it as little unnatural as possible. So I said, what would you recommend? So he said, well, that the boys and girls are allowed to touch each other in the normal way. I said, what is the normal way exactly? He said, you know what the normal way. I said, I don't know, tell me exactly what's the normal way. So he said, well, you know, they should be able to touch it. I said, look, how far? Would you mind if your kids slept together? I said, no, absolutely not, never. I said, okay, so they can touch each other, but they can't sleep together. Right, now, in the middle, where does it stop? You can touch each other. Can they kiss each other? He said, yes. I said, how far? He said, it's becoming a bit, he said, you're trying to be too dogmatic. How can you govern how far you kiss? I said, okay, but do you realize what you're saying? You can't, exactly that, you can't govern how far you go. There's a certain dynamics to a relationship, to a physical relationship between a man and a woman. And once that dynamics has started, it's unnatural to stop it. Very unnatural. Much more unnatural than not starting in the first place. To interfere with the dynamics of a natural relationship between man and woman, how can one do such a thing? The natural place to stop is before you start. And that really is the understanding of the concept of precious. That averas have their own dynamics. They grow, they develop, they evolve, they're an organism. An avera isn't just a little black dot. An avera is a whole, it has a personality, you get to know them. And they're fascinating, and they're clever. And they have a psychology, and they have a background, and they have parents and children and cousins and uncles and aunts. And they say, I've never been there, but they say when you get up there you meet the whole family. They all come to meet you. A whole lot of them. Any of them that you've had anything to do with over here. But one has to get to know them. One mustn't just shove them into a cupboard and pretend that they don't exist, and or that they're just little abstract things that one mustn't do. They're not things that one mustn't do. Each avera is a whole book of psychology. Each avera. One could go to university for 5 years to study each avera. to do a course on each Avera. One couldn't do it. Nobody would think of going to do a course on the psychology of Averas, and that would be a lifetime. You choose one or two or three Averas, that takes you 15, 20 years to understand them. These are complex personalities. And an Avera, strangely enough, this is the tragic thing about an Avera, starts, it has its roots in the area of Mutter. Where its roots are, there's nothing wrong. That's the whole problem. There isn't a clear place, there's a clear place where it becomes wrong. But where the whole thing starts operating, it's not wrong. For example, if I'm driving at night in the rain, pouring rain, and I see a young girl who happens to be a pretty girl, but it makes no difference even if she's an ugly girl, running in the rain without a raincoat, is it wrong of me to offer her a lift? Yes, sir. How can you leave a girl running in the street all alone? There's nothing wrong with it. Take her a lift. It's in public. It's in the road. She gets to her apartment and it's quiet there and it's not a nice part of town. Is it nice of me to expect her to walk up to her apartment all on her own? No. So you see her up to her apartment. There's nothing wrong. Is it nice of her to send me back out into the rain without offering me a cup of coffee? So nothing wrong with her inviting me in for a cup of coffee. So up till now there's nothing wrong. But the thing, the whole dynamics has already started. A relationship is being set into place. A relationship has been born out of doing a mitzvah. And it's already heading for danger. One has to be careful. And that's the problems with averas. To recognize them long before they become averas. To be able to identify them. We always say that, you know, Rishoyim, one isn't worried about. The Gemara says it in fact. What one's worried about are the hypocrites. What one's worried about are the people who look like tzaddikim and they're really reshoim. Those are the ones that one has to be scared of, one has to be careful of. It's the same with averas. Once that avera isn't easily identifiable, yeah, they can be handled. But the terrifying dealing with averas is when they're still mutter, when they're still okay. And that's when they start. Was there anything wrong with Chava having a chat with a snake? Was there anything wrong? Did the snake tell her a lie? No, the Gemara says the snake's one of the guys who talks 100% truth. Everything he said was right. If everything he said was right, was it so wrong that Chava tried? One can take it and take it quite far. Sure, one comes to a point where one says, this is wrong. But by that time, it's too late already. It's unnatural to stop at the point where it becomes an avera. And that's something one has to understand when one's striving to improve oneself, when one's striving to raise oneself and to purify oneself. One has to understand that when the thing becomes an avera, at the point at which this growth becomes wrong, it's almost too late to stop it. It can be done and it must be done. One has to stop it. But it's so hard. And it's a lot easier if one's able to recognize the thing at its roots. Huey, good vach. Good Shabbos, Yui. That's precious. Precious is the ability to recognize the Avera at its roots. Let's look at a couple of other examples which the Mesilas Yesharim himself gives. Nothing wrong with drinking wine, as the Ramban says. Except, there can be situations in which drinking wine can lead to things which are wrong. Inhibitions are removed, normal social behavior is no longer required as a normative, things can be said which are excused under the influence of alcohol, whereas if they weren't under the influence of alcohol, one would never have said them and they would never have been excused. So one starts with something which is absolutely mutter, and it's unnatural to drink a lot and to continue behaving as if you didn't drink. Unnatural. So the Porush understands that. And the Porush is careful before he touches the wine. One of the prime examples of a Porush is a Nozim, who realizes that although wine is mutter, I've got to be careful. Says the Mesilas Yesharim, there's nothing wrong with living luxuriously. It doesn't say in the Torah how many cars you're allowed to have. You can have 20 cars. And you can have 50 acres of ground with 6 tennis courts and 3 swimming pools, and you can have a house centrally heated and air conditioned, with a playroom and a television room and a billiard room and the whole lot. Everybody agrees you can have a television room, even according to those who say you can't have a television in it. There's a television room you can have. There's absolutely no limit to what luxury you're allowed to live in. It doesn't say anywhere that you can't live in luxury. But says the Mesillas Yesharim, a Porush understands that if you're living in luxury, you've got to support that luxury. You need servants to clean up, and you need machinery, and you've got a fat electricity bill, and you've got to keep the place in good repair. And if you're living like that, you've got to entertain on a certain level. You can't invite guests to a house like that and give them hard-boiled eggs and cream cheese. You've got to give them a decent supper, and that costs money. And the price of meat is increasing. And all of a sudden, you find that you're having to work twice as hard in order to keep your house. And that causes Bittul Torah, a time where you could be learning, you now have to be working. And then you find that even working twice as hard, you're not quite making it. And the bank manager is beginning to get a little bit edgy. So now you've got to start resorting to doing things which are not 100% straight, because otherwise you're just not going to make it. And all sorts of things, one after the other, happen because you did something which you were allowed to do. The Porush understands. He says, yeah, I can live in luxury, but only after I can afford it. I don't first live in luxury and then work for it. If I've got enough money to live in luxury without having to work any harder than I'm working now, I can live in luxury. But not to go and live in luxury and decide I'm then going to work for it. That the Porush understands. And so the Mesillas Yesharim goes through various examples of things which in principle are not wrong, but their natural sequence of events that flow from that must lead to things which are wrong if one's living a normal life. And it's far more abnormal to stop once the process has started than not to start the process at all. That's precious. And if one looks at the common denominator of all these various facets and examples of precious, and the Mesillas Yesharim says one can't go through all the examples, but if one just sees what's common about it, it's really one understanding. This flows from what we did in the Chumash this afternoon. Precious is the understanding that fulfillment can be derived from two areas, because we're split people. We're all human beings made up of two parts. We have a spiritual intellectual part, and we have an animal physical part. And we can feel alive as animals, and we can feel alive as human beings. One has to be able to look back at a day and realize that what's given one nachas today has not really been spiritual things. It hasn't that I've been particularly creative, that I understood one Rashi on the parsha. If I worked the whole Shabbos, 4-5 hours, let's say, I sat and worked on one Rashi, and I now understood the one Rashi, and I feel good, okay, there's something to look back and be proud of. But to be able to say I went through the whole parsha, twice inside and three times with the Rashi, and in the English and the Greek and the whole lot, been through the whole parsha, and I davened and I've learned Gemara, I've done everything. But where have you got fulfillment from? What makes you feel alive today? Ah, we had a good Shabbos meal and I had a good shlof. That's not Shabbos. That's not what's meant to make you alive on a Shabbos. That's what a Porush has to understand. He has to avoid finding his fulfillment in the Hechsherim, in the preparations for doing bigger things. And a material existence, a physical existence, is allowed, it's permitted, but it's permitted only as a Hechsher is preparing oneself for something much bigger than that and something much more meaningful than that. And to derive one's fulfillment out of that, that's dangerous, because then one's not growing. One thinks one's being fulfilled, and one thinks one's being fulfilled, and one's not growing at all. And that's what the Porush understands. If you go through all the examples, you'll see that's it. He understands that all Averas result from seeking fulfillment in the material world. There's nothing wrong with operating in the material world, but seeking one's fulfillment in the material world, that's dangerous. And that's where the Averas all start. One's able to understand that the material world is merely to prepare one for the bigger things, the Averas can be handled, because right at their very origins one's ready for them, one knows where they're crouching, one knows where they're going to lead, and one knows this isn't where the fulfillment comes from. The fulfillment comes from understanding the Torah, putting the Torah into practice, developing new understandings of the Torah by studying it, by practicing it, by seeing how it works, by performing mitzvahs, chesed to other people, kindness, tzedakah. These are the things that make one feel good.
The other things are just to enable one to reach there, just to enable one to do it. Then one stands less in danger of coming to the Averis. And if that's our understanding of Rashi, then he's much closer to the Ramban. Purushim min Arayas min Avera, you've got to be separate from Arayas and Avera. But how do you become separate from Avera? By separating yourself even in the things which are allowed. By making sure that that's not where you get your fulfillment from. Now what does Purush mean, separate? It means like looking at things through a glass window. If you look at things through a glass window, you're somehow emotionally detached from what goes on outside. You can see it all, but you're emotionally detached. That's why if you're looking through a glass window where you can't hear anything, you're in a soundproof room with a glass window, and you see somebody walk down the street and slip on a banana skin and hurt himself badly, you can laugh. You feel totally detached and you're just looking at something. You're looking at a sequence of events. You're not identifying with people. You're separate. You're completely isolated and separate. That ability to separate oneself, one has to develop. So that while you're working in the world and operating in the world, there's a bit of a mechitza, there's a bit of a glass barrier between you and the world, in the sense that that's not where you're getting your fulfillment. You're doing it, and you're doing it well, and you're operating, and you're efficient and competent and all the rest of it. But even if you work for 15 hours out there in the world, and you came back for 15 minutes to daven Ma'ariv and to learn one pasuk of Chumash and Rashi, your fulfillment has to come from those 15 minutes, not from the 15 hours out in the fields. 15 hours out in the fields you can enjoy. There's nothing, no reason that you've got to not enjoy them. You don't have to do them with a frown on your face. You can have simcha and you can be happy that the Ribbono Shel Olam has given you the opportunity to earn yourself a living and to live and to do all the rest that you have to do. Sure, one can enjoy it. But at the end of the day, when you say to yourself, oh, today was good, it's got to be good because of the 10-15 minutes you spent doing something worthwhile, not because of the hours and hours that were spent on just preparing yourself to do that worthwhile thing. And if you think that that's a funny proportion, it's not. You'll find that with everything in life, 90%, if not more, of the effort is in order that you should be able to pick 10% of the fruits. The thrills come from the little things that don't happen that often. But one has to do a lot of groundwork before one can have those thrills. You've got to plow the ground, plant, water, nurture, reap. A lot has to happen before you can actually take the benefit of all that work. So it's not a wrong proportion to work and work and work, and yet to find your fulfillment comes from a chavrusa that you had for half an hour in the evening, or for an hour, or for 2 hours, or somebody that you did a hachnosas orchim for, or some tzedakah that you were able to give. That's the thing which made the whole day worthwhile. That's okay. It doesn't matter how much. It matters how deep. That's all. And in order to reach that level where one's able to operate with this degree of precious, and as I said, precious doesn't mean that we all start developing this thing, kind of thing, tomorrow, but it means that one should at least understand the existence of the concept of precious and start little by little working a little bit on precious. The first area that we have to work on is make sure that we can get fulfillment from other areas, because we can make the same kind of Shabbos problems that I spoke about in the beginning. If you start with precious before you've got the rest, that's why I told you one has to be so careful. If you start with precious before you know how to have fun with Torah, if you don't yet know how to enjoy and have fulfillment from Torah, and you start already with precious, then you're going to have to go, not, never mind to a doctor, and never mind to a psychologist or to a psychiatrist, but that place, Trevor, where's that place that you work expectantly? That's where you'll have to go. You'll be completely demented eventually. You'll get no nachas from the physical things you're doing, and no nachas from the spiritual things you're doing. So you're basically getting no nachas at all. What was that? I missed it. So the first thing one has to do is to be able to ensure that one knows how to extract fulfillment from Yiddishkeit. That one is able to do that 10-15 minute mitzvah and get a full day's worth of fulfillment out of it. Because before you can do that, you can't start with precious. And to do that, one has to know how to do a mitzvah in depth. And not to do a mitzvah in a routine way, not to do a mitzvah in a superficial way, but to be able to do a mitzvah with depth. With depth means with understanding, with knowledge, with feeling, with excitement. And each person should take, if he's going to start exercising precious, he should take one mitzvah that he does regularly. In the case of a man, take tefillin. In the case of a lady, challah, mikveh, whatever it is, it makes no difference. Take one mitzvah you do regularly, a portion of the davening, something small and handleable. One of the brachas, benching, lighting candles, whatever it is, one mitzvah. And start developing this ability in that mitzvah. That means learning it, going through the two Shulchan Aruch with the Gemaras on it, the Beis Yosef, going through the Shulchan Aruch with the Mefoshim on the Shulchan Aruch, and really going into the background of that one mitzvah. Get yourself a chavrusa for it, or do it yourself, whatever you want to, ask for whatever help you need from the people that are around, there are people that can help one with such a thing. Take one little mitzvah and learn the mitzvah through properly. When you've learned the mitzvah through, start developing a bit of a feeling for it. Each time you do it, remember all that you've learned about the mitzvah. Put that into practice at the moment of operating in the mitzvah. Do it with a bit of feeling, do it with a bit of depth, do it with a bit of understanding and a bit of excitement. So that you begin to find that you can be thrilled by Torah. Torah is not just something to be done, one has to be able to get one's kicks from Torah. The fact that Jewish people, that there seems to be a tendency, by the way, that the incidence of drug taking and various other forms of social perversion is higher among Jews in South Africa, and I'm sure it's the same elsewhere, than it is amongst Gentiles of the same socio-economic strata. That's something which is just coming out at the moment and shocking a lot of people, and that it's highest of all. Let's turn this thing off and do it back to you. And something which is shocking a lot of people, and there's really nothing to be shocked about. It's obvious. A Jew needs kicks. A Jew needs thrills. He was created with a capacity for thrills. And if you're not going to give it to him in Torah, he's going to look for it somewhere else. And if he's the kind of person who's come into Yiddishkeit already, and he won't look for it somewhere else, but he doesn't get it in Torah either, then he's the kind of person who might land up being a patient of Trevor in the place where Trevor works. Because then he's a frustrated individual who needs thrills and has got no way to find them. He hasn't got the openings that the secular society has got, and he hasn't developed the openings in a film society, in a Jewish society. And it becomes terribly urgent for all of us to start slowly, slowly developing the ability to get thrills from our Yiddishkeit. Through our learning and through our keeping of the mitzvahs. But the keeping of the mitzvahs now have to start to become wrapped in a certain degree of knowledge and a certain degree of understanding and background which one has to work on. Pick one mitzvah, work on it, and see the change in keeping that mitzvah. And even if it takes you a year to do it, believe you me, that year is worthwhile, particularly if it's a mitzvah you do every day or once a week. So you've spent a year on getting the kicks out of something you're doing daily. And next year you'll do another one, and another one, and each time it will go quicker. And very soon you'll find that you have a tremendous understanding for a lot of things that you're doing, and that your whole Yiddishkeit becomes more meaningful.